4 days' ride. Eliana whipped her head around to stare at the wraith. 4 days? How long have we been here?
A week.
Eliana closed her eyes, fighting back a swell of panic. 11 days since their capture. 11 days away from Remy, and no idea of where he might now be. Narvi moaned quietly, her head lolling against Eliana's shoulder.
Eliana.
We're going to have to run soon, Eliana said quietly. Can you wake up for me, Narvi? Zara uttered a hissed curse. Eliana tensed. What is it?
Semyaza is here.
Zara jerked her head at the perimeter wall.
He was supposed to be out on tonight's hunt. He must have realized you were gone, or sensed my own presence.
Eliana squinted across the yard, seeing nothing. But then a disturbance rippled in the air. There was a shift, a flicker of a dark shape, a man, but taller and longer-limbed than a human. Fear dried out her mouth.
What do we do?
I'll take care of Semyaza,
Zara said, her voice hard, and Eliana thought, rather delighted.
You'll hear a loud crash when I hit him and see a slant in the air. Run for the gate on the eastern wall. Run until you can't any more, then hide in the forest. I'll find you. If Semyaza doesn't trap me first.
Trap you?
I'll explain later.
But the guards,
Eliana gestured at the Fidelia guards patrolling the yard.
I can't fight off all of them, especially not with Narvi.
What we need, Zara mused, is a diversion.
The western wall exploded. Eliana ducked low over Narvi as stone and wood went flying across the yard, then peered through the clouds of dust to see that a 30-foot section of the wall was now gone. Zara stretched to her full height.
Well, she said cheerfully, that will work.
Then she zipped out into the chaos and disappeared. Eliana waited, wiping sweat from her forehead. A low boom rattled the yard as of two winds colliding. 50 yards away and 10 feet above the ground, a patch of light shifted and warped, swirling like a whirlpool's mouth. Zara had found Semyaza. Eliana hefted Narvi back to her feet and slapped her across the face. Her drug-clouded eyes snapped open, and Eliana was pleased to see a spark of anger inside them.
We have to run now, Eliana told her. Or we'll die.
Narvi nodded, set her jaw.
Hold on to me.
Eliana turned. Narvi's arm once more slung around her shoulders and ran into the yard. Beside her, Narvi's breathing came labored and thin. In the bedlam of dust and shouting soldiers, no one saw them, until they had almost reached the abandoned eastern gate. A Fidelia soldier jumped down from the gate's watchtower, a crude revolver in hand and a belt of ammunition strapped to his torso. Eliana skidded to a halt. The Fidelia soldier smiled kindly.
There now, lambs, he said, gesturing with his gun. You've gotten turned around in all this ruckus.
Eliana watched him approach, saw him glance at the knife she had strapped to her body. His gaze hardened. His smile remained.
Poor lambs, his gun still pointed at Eliana's chest. He brushed a lock of matted hair out of her eyes and clucked his tongue. So lost. So young.
A shift in the darkness behind him was Eliana's cue. She lowered her eyes to the ground, nodded forlornly.
We didn't mean to do wrong, she whispered, and then heard the familiar sound of Arabeth finding a home in someone's heart.
She looked up as the Fidelia soldier grunted, gaped down at Arabeth's jagged blade protruding from his chest, coughed up a pool of dark blood. Behind him stood the wolf, mask in place. Eliana's exhausted body nearly buckled with relief.
Despite everything, she said, thank you.
Simon wiped Arabeth clean on his cloak and handed it to her.
I'll trade you.
Eliana complied, shifting Narvi into Simon's arms. They hurried together out of the yard and into the night, down a rocky slope cluttered with flat pale stones that crumbled underfoot.
Remy?
She asked. Safe and hidden, Simon's mask glinted, moon-colored.
We're going to him now.
And when we get there,
Eliana thought, tightening her grip on Arabeth as she ran.
We will speak alone, with my blade at your throat.
Chapter 41 Riel.
No one can be sure of Audric the Lightbringer's last words, but in the days before the fall, whispers travelled fast across the world.
His last words, the whispers said, were for his murderer.
I love you, Riel.
The Last Days of the Golden King. Author unknown. 3 days. Riel dragged herself up to her rooms long after the sun had set. 3 days until the fire trial. And then, what?
My lady, chided Eveline from the door. You really must try to get more sleep, at least until the trials are over.
You're right, Eveline,
Riel replied.
It's only that when you're soon to be thrown into a death pit of flames, you find yourself wanting to study your prayers as much as you can.
Prayers are well and good, my lady, but sleep is better. You can neither pray nor fight fire if you're exhausted. Riel, yawning, untied her braid and shook her hair free.
I'm inclined to agree. My father, however, is not.
After checking to make sure Etheria had taken her usual nighttime post on the terrace, Riel stumbled into her bathing rooms and froze, suddenly and wholly awake. Audric sat on a settee by the far window. His hair was a mess of curls, as though he'd been running his fingers through it for hours. He stood to face her, hands clenched at his sides. He gave her a tight smile.
Hello, he said quietly.
Riel stepped back into her bedroom.
Eveline, she called over her shoulder. I hope you don't mind, but I wonder if you might give me some time alone.
My lady, it isn't safe.
I'm quite safe with Etheria on my terrace.
As if on cue, the Chevalier snorted from beyond the curtains.
Grant me this wish. Would you please?
Just tonight, Eveline said sternly after a moment. The least I can do, I suppose, after everything you've been through.
That's right,
Riel ushered her out as kindly as she could manage.
Good night, Eveline. And thank you for your vigilance.
Of course, my lady. Riel shut the door, locked it, took a breath to brace herself. When she turned around, Audric was standing in the middle of the room, looking rather abashed.
I'm sorry for sneaking in, he said, but I wanted to see you. I won't make a habit of it, I promise.
Maybe you should,
Riel teased. But her voice came out shaky. Audric's dark gaze searched her own, then fell to the floor. A flurry of nerves danced up her breastbone.
Did you want to talk to me about something?
Yes. It's...
Now his voice was the unsteady one. He cleared his throat.
I'm afraid, though, that I shouldn't. That I'm a fool for coming here tonight.
You know you can tell me anything.
I know.
Then talk to me, she reached for him. What is it?
He brought her hand to his lips.
Riel,
he whispered against her skin.
Riel. Riel.
You're frightening me. Say something other than my name. Say something real.
Something real.
He laughed a little and stepped away from her.
It's just...
When he fell silent again, Riel thought she might scream. Audric, if you don't start talking this instant...
You understand what all of this means, don't you?
He gestured at the castle around them.
I will be king someday, and you will be the Sun Queen.
Well, not if the fire trial...
Oh, Riel, you'll conquer that trial, as you have all the others. You'll be glorious, and then...
He dragged a hand through his hair, turned away, then back to her.
Then you will serve me. And if I have to send you into battle to save the kingdom, I will do it. That is the Sun Queen's foretold purpose. To defend and protect. And I cannot stray from that simply because I love you.
His voice caught on the last words. Riel approached slowly, her heart pounding. She touched his arm, and when he looked down at her, his eyes warm and troubled, she cradled his cheek in her hand. He leaned in to her touch, cupped her hand in his, and kissed her palm.
I know I shouldn't touch you, he said, his voice rough. We decided it. We had good reasons. But God help me. I've been able to think of little else since that day in the gardens.
Riel moved closer to him, drawing his hand down to her waist. Remember, Ludivine doesn't care. She wants us to.
It's not Lou or her family. Not anymore. Now I'm wondering,
he leaned his forehead against hers, closed his eyes.
If only I could stop loving you.
What are you saying?
As Sun Queen, you will be sacred to our people, Riel. A symbol longed for and prayed for since the dawn of our age.
Let's not call me that unless it actually happens. I'm nervous enough as it is.
The Archon will bless you in front of the entire city. I cannot interfere with that. I cannot tarnish it.
She stepped back from him. Are you saying taking me into your bed would tarnish me somehow? He looked at her helplessly.
I don't know how to both love you and be the person who sends you to war.
She crossed her arms over her chest. Are you just now realizing that could happen? What did you think the trials were for, exactly?
He turned away, eyes bright. She followed him.
Audric, I want you to listen to this, for I will only say it once. He looked up at the change in her voice. If you ever sent me into battle, she said, I would go gladly, and I would burn our enemies to ashes. But I would not do it for you, or because of the prophecy. I would do it because this is my home, too. And if you tried to keep me near you for love of me, you would fail. He stared at her, the air between them snapping taut and furious. She lifted her chin and dared him silently to defy her. But he didn't. Instead, he strode toward her and caught her mouth, hungrily, with his. She gasped into his kiss, stumbling back from the force of it. He steadied her, hands at her hips, and moved with her until she stood pressed between the wall and his body. She opened her mouth to him, wound her fingers through his hair. His hands were everywhere, first cradling her face, then cupping her hips to pull her closer against his body. When he trailed his lips down her neck and lower, kissing along the neckline of her gown, Riel arched her body up into his. The fire popped and hissed. Yes, she whispered, tugging up his shirt to find bare skin. Yes.
His voice was a low rumble. Yes, what, darling? Tell me where to touch you.
Where you did before. Please, Audric. He moved back to her mouth as he gathered up her skirts, then slid his palm across her thighs. At the first touch of his hand on her belly, Riel jerked against him with a gasp.
Spread your legs for me, Riel, he murmured, his voice shaking at her ear. I've got you.
She complied, and when his hand found her, stroking softly between her legs, she cried out and clutched his shirt in her fists. The wall at her back trembled. He slid one finger inside her, his thumb still stroking her.
Every night since that day, he whispered against her mouth, I've dreamed of this. I wake with your name on my lips.
No matter how Riel moved, she could not get enough of him. She dug her fingernails into the small of his back, pulling him closer.
Faster, Aldric. Harder, please.
He obeyed. Like this.
Yes. Yes.
She felt herself stretch around his fingers. He had added another, thrusting, faster.
Like that. Oh, God.
She let out a sound she had never made, a low, throaty groan that shook her to her toes.
That's it.
Aldric kissed her temple, her hair. His voice was full of wonder.
That's it, Riel.
She clung to him, ground her hips against his hand, until the tingling wave that had been building deep inside her crested, sweeping across her skin and down her spine. She jerked against him, gave a sharp cry, and shattered. The room shook around them. The lit candles across the room sparked, jagged flames leaping inches into the air. The hearth fire snapped. Embers scattered across the carpet. The walls quivered for a few seconds, as if caught in a small quake, then fell silent.
What was that?
Aldric whispered.
It was me.
Riel closed her eyes, her cheeks flaming.
I'm sorry.
You?
We shouldn't have done that. Let me go, please.
He released her, and she moved away unsteadily, straightening her gown. She could think only of her father's voice, so many years ago. You might lose control one day. Hurt him. The last thing Aldric needs is someone like you hovering about.
You should go,
she said, folding her arms over her chest. Aldric was quiet for a moment.
I will.
Of course, if that's what you want. But first, would you tell me what happened?
4 trials, and I was fine. I made it through. I felt stronger than ever before. And now, a few moments with you, and I make the room fall apart.
Nothing's fallen apart. Riel, it was only a little tremor. She whirled on him.
Only a little tremor. And what if we had kept on? What if I had lost control? What if the floor had cracked open beneath our feet? My father was right. He could see it before I did.
What did he see?
That I love you,
she burst out, tears splitting her voice.
That for all my years of work, every night alone, every prayer, it's undone when I'm with you. You touch me and I burn, and I could take everything burning down with me.
Riel, look at me. Aldric took hold of her hand so gently that she began to cry in earnest.
I'll hurt you, she whispered.
His eyes were steady and warm on her face. You won't.
If anything happened to you because of me, I couldn't bear it, Aldric. I won't do it. I'll be alone forever if I must.
No. No, not you.
He tenderly turned her face up to his, feathered soft kisses across her cheeks.
You deserve only happiness, not a cold bed and an empty room.
She closed her eyes at his touch.
I'm too dangerous.
You're just my kind of dangerous.
This isn't a joke, Aldric. This is your life. And mine.
And my life is pale without you in it.
His hands cupped her face.
I'm not afraid of you, Riel. I trust you. And I want you.
Brielle leaned into his chest, breathed him in, his sun-warmed skin, the cotton of his tunic.
"What if I asked you," she said at last, "to kiss me again?"
"I would kiss you all night, and never tire of it."
She pulled back to look up at him. "And if I asked you to take me to bed?"
"Then I would take you there," he said, "and not rest until you'd had your fill of me."
"That's just what I want."
She kissed the triangle of skin above his collar and whispered,
"I want you to fill me."
She stretched onto her toes to kiss him before he could reply. And when his arms came feverishly around her, she grinned against his mouth and let out a delighted laugh.
"Bed,"
she whispered, pulling him blindly toward it. He backed her up against one of the bedposts, his mouth never leaving hers. He kissed her, as if the air inside her was what he needed to survive. She put her hands behind her, against the post to brace herself, and arched toward him.
"Yes,"
he said breathlessly, fumbling with the line of buttons down the front of her gown. He slid the bodice down her torso so that it pooled around her waist. Her breasts fell free, and he lowered his mouth to them at once, groaning against her skin. Riel twisted beneath him until she could bear the ache between her legs no longer.
"I need you," she gasped, clutching his shoulders. "Please, Audric."
He pulled his tunic over his head, then undid his belt, kicked off his boots. He moved her toward the bed, sucking gently on her bottom lip. Together they tugged on her gown until it fell to the floor. Audric murmured,
"My God, Riel, you're beautiful,"
and helped her down onto the pile of blankets strewn across the bed. His hands traced the curves of her breasts, her waist, her hips. He kissed each of her bruises from the shadow trial, murmuring her name against her skin more lovingly than any prayer. When his hips settled on hers at last, Riel barely managed to stifle her scream. He threaded his fingers through her own, pressed her hands gently back against the pillows. At each shift of his hips, a new wave of pleasure surged inside her. Shaking beneath the hard, warm lines of his body, she said desperately,
"Audric, please."
"Wait." He kissed the curve of her chin, pulled slightly away. "Wait a moment."
"No. Now."
"Before we do this," she heard the cautious note in his voice, and understood.
"I'm taking a tonic for it." She tenderly touched his face. "Please, don't worry."
He nodded, lowered his mouth to hers, murmured,
"I love you, Riel,"
and ended her in one smooth movement. She cried out, bucking against him. She felt impossibly, deliciously full, and touched his face with a breathless laugh.
"Are you all right?" he whispered.
"Fine," she clutched his arms, smiling up at him. "Don't leave."
"Never." "I'm sorry."
"No, don't be sorry. I'm fine."
She touched two fingers to his lips, let out a shaky laugh.
"I'm more than fine."
He grinned, kissed the soft skin beneath her eyes, and began to move inside her. Riel gasped, arching up against him.
"Look at me,"
he urged her quietly, and when she locked eyes with him, the focused devotion on his face made her heart swell.
"I'm right here. And I love you. I love you, I love you."
"Kiss me,"
she whispered, trembling. He obeyed, his mouth warm and slow on hers, echoing the gentle thrusts of his hips.
"Should I stop?"
He kissed along her jawline. The soft scrape of his teeth sent delicate chills across her skin. She closed her eyes and shifted beneath him,
Pleasure swelled slowly up her body, warm and unhurried.
Don't stop, she murmured. Not ever.
Riel. Riel.
He moved a bit harder against her, his voice darkening.
Tell me what you want, and I'll do it.
She twisted in his gentle grip with a sigh.
I want to hear what you want. That is my wish.
I want to make you come apart in my arms. I want you to forget your fear, your worries, whatever darkness haunts your thoughts.
He slid one hand down her body to their joined hips, stroked between her legs. She cursed, slammed her palm against the bed, fumbling for an anchor. His hand found hers, steadied it in his own.
What else do you want?
She murmured, gazing up at him. She moved her hips against his own.
I...
His voice broke. He shook his head, shuddering as she slid a hand up his arm. She brought his hand to her mouth, kissed his palm.
You want to make me scream?
He made a small, choked sound. His hips jerked sharply.
God, yes, he groaned.
Faster, then.
She touched his lips with her thumb. When he took it in his mouth, his eyes drifting shut, she shivered and smiled and hooked her leg around his. She could have watched him like this forever, losing himself in her, coming unraveled in her arms.
Please, Audric.
Even as he obeyed, his gentleness astounded her. His hand released hers to cradle her face and slid down to caress her breasts. The sweet ache of him inside her drew shuddering waves across her skin. She arched up into his touch, clutched the blankets in her fists.
She let out a frantic little sob. Audric, please.
He murmured into the hollow of her throat, his hand shaking around her.
Yes, Riel. Yes. That's it.
The rough longing in his voice set her afire. When she slid her hands into his hair and tugged hard on his curls, he cried out against her neck, and the desperate, utterly male sound was her undoing, sending her spiraling up and up until she fell back against the bed, pulsing golden with pleasure. She clung to him, helpless and limp, her vision a buzzing haze, and stroked his hair as his hips slowed. And with the solid weight of Audric above her, his lips in her hair, and his voice hoarse with love, her own body feeling blissfully boneless. Riel watched the sparking bright flames around her room with no fear in her heart, and thought nothing of Corian at all.
Chapter 42. Eliana. Have you ever seen the wolf? Talk to him. The man's got a bad light in his eyes. You look at his face for half a minute, you see he's been ripped apart and sewn back together more times than anyone ought to have been.
Interrogation of an unnamed Red Crown defector. Proceeding execution. Simon brought them to a Red Crown safe house, deep in a pine wood at the base of a cliff. A small log cabin, draped in moss and cloaked by a tangled thicket of trees. As soon as Eliana stepped inside, she heard a soft cry and looked around in time to see Remy jump off a chair by a tiny stove. When she knelt to catch him, his hug nearly knocked her over.
"Stop leaving me behind," he whispered into her hair. "El, I woke up, and you were gone."
She closed her eyes, pressed her palms against the delicate bones of his back. He'd grown thinner since leaving Orlean. Then, as he wiped his cheeks on her shirt, she remembered Zara's words.
"The woman you think is your mother, but truly is not."
The boy she thought was her brother, but...
Remy pulled away from her, face splotchy and tear-streaked,
and gave her a brave smile.
Hob taught me how to use the stove. I'll make you some supper.
And Eliana decided at once that Zara was wrong, even if the Wraith had been speaking the truth, even if Yosef, Rosen, and Remy Ferrocora were not hers through blood. They were hers at heart, always. And if anyone tried to tell her differently, she would send them crashing to their knees at her feet. She dried Remy's cheeks with her thumbs.
Only if you make some for yourself, too.
As he hurried away toward the stove, Eliana found Hob himself at the far side of the room, settling Navi into a small bed.
Is Camille safe? She asked.
When we left her, she and her people were alive and well, Hob replied. Simon sent that Invictus assassin limping off into the night.
Eliana's stomach dropped.
Razaval, Simon didn't kill him.
Unfortunately, no.
She closed her eyes. He won't rest until he finds me.
Well, at least he's not here now. You can thank Simon for that.
Eliana refused to acknowledge that or the man in question.
Why are you here? What about Patrick?
Simon took some blows in that fight. I wanted to help him get the boy to safety.
Hob smiled at Remy.
He's good company, your brother.
On her cot, Navi shifted with a moan. Hob wrung out a rag in a pail of water and draped it over Navi's forehead.
Have you seen this before?
Eliana asked him.
What's been done to her?
Hob's face was tight with anger.
No. I don't know what this is, and I'm not sure I care to.
He drew a quilt up to Navi's chin, tucked it around her body.
Camille requested I ask after Lainis. The girl, her missing attendant. She was taken by Fidelia as well?
Lainis. She had completely forgotten to look for the girl. Eliana shook her head, hoping Hob couldn't see the truth on her face.
There wasn't time to look for her. I'm sorry.
Do you know what they were doing there? Fidelia? Did you find out why they steal girls?
I don't. But the sounds I heard while in my cell...
It's all right. You don't need to tell me, Dredd.
The word had no venom in it, only a heavy sadness.
You should rest. When Simon returns, you'll be leaving soon after.
Simon. Eliana turned, searching the room for him. But he was gone. She barely restrained herself from flinging Arabeth at the wall.
Where did he go?
To meet a contact at the border who will help you across the narrow sea to Astavar, Hob said.
Eliana began unstrapping the knives from her body.
Do you have clothes for me? Something other than prison garb? You're not leaving again?
Remy asked quickly. She gave him a small smile.
Not leaving. I just want to sit outside. Get some air after being cooped up in a cell for a week.
And so she could see Simon before the others and not let him past until she'd gotten the answers she deserved. Zara arrived 2 hours later, appearing without warning at Eliana's side. Eliana spat out a curse and jumped up from the tree stump she'd been sitting on. The Wraith's black smile was barely visible in the shadowed trees.
Hello, my queen.
I mean, Eliana.
Next time, Eliana hissed, returning to her seat,
give me some warning before you just pop into the air like that.
I am overjoyed to see you as well, especially since we parted in such a dire moment.
Eliana sighed sharply.
Yes, thank you for that.
For what?
Despite her irritation, Eliana smirked.
You're going to make me say it, aren't you?
I did risk much by engaging Semyaza, Zara pointed out. Though I would do it again, and happily, to serve you.
Thank you, Zara, said Eliana with a sweep of her hand.
for battling Semyaza so Na'vi and I could escape. Your loyalty and bravery are to be commended.
Zara's form shimmered with pleasure.
You sounded very regal just then, Eliana. Blood will out, as they say.
I don't want to talk about my blood, Eliana snapped.
As you wish, Zara paused. It will, however, have to be discussed. Eventually.
Eliana looked away into the trees.
And if I don't believe what you claim?
You forget I was in your mind, back in your cell, Zara said gently. I think you've known for some time that something was misaligned in your past. That you aren't like those around you. There is the matter of your body's ability to heal itself, for one.
Eliana whirled on her.
Listen to me right now, Wraith. You may have the power to enter my mind, but you will not do so again unless at some point in the future I demand it of you. And until then, you will not even once mention the Blood Queen or the Lightbringer or whatever person it is you think I am. Is that understood?
Zara bowed her head.
Of course, Eliana. I will respect your wishes.
Thank you.
They sat in silence for a long time, the woods quiet and dark around them.
Do you know what they did to Na'vi?
Eliana asked at last.
I wish I didn't, Zara replied. Throughout the long years since the Blood Queen's fall, the Emperor has undertaken many experiments in an attempt to achieve resurrection without her. Medicines, drugs, surgical procedures, manipulation of what he calls genetics.
What is that?
Put simply, it is the basic life structure of any living creature. Not the Imperium, not even the Emperor can touch that, much to his despair. But it is effective, nonetheless.
Eliana shook her head.
And he uses it for what?
He is creating things, Zara murmured. With the help of healers who exchange their skills for their family's safety. He is creating creatures that aren't quite human or animal. They are called crawlers. They are monsters, Eliana. Mutations is the word I've heard used by the Empire physicians, and an army of them is bound for Astavar.
Eliana stared at Zara, her mouth gone dry.
I don't understand. They have a whole army of Adatrochs, an army that's devoured the world. Why this, too?
There are many ways to strike fear into the hearts of those you have conquered, Zara said gravely. The continued existence of Red Crown eats away at the Emperor, as does the resistance of Astavar. He is creative. He will think up new horrors for every day that any human walks free, until there is no fight left in you.
And only women, only girls,
Eliana's stomach turned.
Why? If it's an army he wants, why not abduct a bunch of hulking men?
That I don't know.
And that was what happened to Na'vi. She was being turned into...
She couldn't finish the question.
By the state of her, it looks to me as if she has only gone through the early stages. Not transformation, but that will come soon.
Zara fell silent, then whispered,
Simon is near.
Eliana tensed.
Is he alone?
Yes.
The air around Zara suddenly felt charged. He has run afoul of angels. Eliana drew Arabeth and surged to her feet.
You said he was alone.
He is. But, and then Zara closed her eyes, shuddered, and made a low sound of pain.
How does he bear it? I never knew.
How does he bear what?
Eliana scanned the trees.
His mind bears many scars,
Zara whispered, her eyes still closed.
Deep ones. How they must hurt him.
What kind of scars? Explain to me, with real, ordinary words.
Someone has hurt him. Badly. Again and again. I can feel it as he approaches. I'm not trying to invade his thoughts, Eliana. But when someone's mind has been abused so thoroughly, a wraith cannot help but feel it.
Zara zipped around to hover behind Eliana.
Beware of him, she whispered. He is almost here. I can hide you if you wish. I've regained enough strength for a few seconds.
Beware of him? Why?
A man with such scars cannot be fully trusted, for those wounds hide his full truth, even from a creature such as I am.
Eliana narrowed her eyes.
You mean you can't read his thoughts?
Zara shook her head.
I know he's near, that he lives in pain he shares with no one. But I can see no more than that. Eliana, I'd no idea Simon was such a man. I would never have trusted his word. Oh, please, let me hide you from him.
No.
Eliana caught a flicker of movement in the trees. Her heart kicked wildly.
I will speak to him.
He won't be able to see me, Zara whispered. You are the only human who can.
That surprised her. Why?
No one else has enough power for it. Since the fall, all your eyes have been shut to the Imperium.
What are you doing out here?
Simon emerged from the trees, lowered his hood, and removed his mask.
You should be resting.
Shaking her nerves free of Zara's hovering fear, Eliana stalked toward him.
I was waiting for you.
He stopped, watching her approach.
Oh? To what do I owe the pleasure of a private meeting with the dread of Orlean?
She marched past him into the trees. When her shoulder brushed his arm, the touch shot through her, shoulder to belly like a hot arrow.
Come with me.
An illicit encounter in the dark, dark woods, he murmured, following her. My most secret dreams have come to life. She kept silent until they had gone a few hundred yards from the safe house. Then she stopped, facing away from him, arms rigid at her sides.
The building where I was held captive, by Fidelia, she began, her voice tight. What was it?
Laboratories, he answered at once.
She turned, steeling herself.
For experimentation on the captured women.
Yes.
Where they are turned into crawlers, thanks to the Emperor's study of genetics.
A flicker of surprise moved across Simon's face.
You have spoken to someone. Who?
Beside Eliana, Zara muttered low.
Someone who will protect her at all costs.
Simon unsheathed the sword at his belt.
Who's there? Step away from her, or I'll gut you.
So Zara was right. He couldn't see the wraith, but he could hear her.
I did speak with someone,
Eliana replied.
Someone who told me you knew about Fidelia all along. You knew who they were, what they were doing. You knew they took my mother, and you knew where to look for her. She wasn't in the laboratories where I was kept, but she is somewhere else. And I'm sure you know, being the mighty wolf, exactly where across the country Fidelia can be found. And yet instead of telling me any of this, you dragged me through the wild and kept me in the dark, knowing all the while what was happening to her.
Simon stood frozen, his sword still in the air.
Your silence, Eliana said, fury rising fast in her chest, is all the confirmation I need.
I did what I was ordered to do, he said, his voice made of stone.
She let out a scornful sound.
The mighty prophet's orders, I suppose.
The prophet sees much and guides my every step.
She turned away, too angry to speak.
If you slice at him, Zara said quietly, I won't try to stop you. I'll make sure to hide the noise from the others.
I don't want to hurt him, Eliana said.
Not yet. Simon's voice was tight with frustration.
Who are you talking to?
Zara rounded on him, an 8-foot-tall echo of the woman she had once been.
If you continue to upset my queen, she boomed, vibrating with anger, I will strike you down where you stand.
Who is this? Simon spat. Show yourself.
Your eyes are not worthy of me, wolf.
Simon stilled, his expression clearing.
Zara, the wraith who's been spying for us.
Zara let out a sharp laugh.
I spy not for you, but for my queen.
She keeps calling me that,
Eliana whispered. She says, she let out a shaky burst of laughter. Behind her, Simon sheathed his sword. She heard him approach her, slowly.
She says you are the Sun Queen, he said, his voice very low.
She looked back at him. The shadows drew new scars across his face, but his eyes were clear and sharp, even in the dim light, and in them she saw a spark of something.
Pity, she thought,
and a burning conviction.
She says you are the one who rises, he continued. The fury-born child. She says you are the daughter of the Lightbringer, and that she will do anything to protect you.
He hesitated, the muscles in his jaw working.
She isn't the only one.
Tell me the truth, then. If you care so much about me,
Eliana's voice came out a hard whisper.
Tell me no more lies.
A few months ago, he said, moving through the trees. I heard of a bounty hunter called the Dread of Orlean. A girl, the rumors said, who had racked up an impressive number of kills. One of the highest in the Empire, in fact.
He stopped, turned back to Eliana.
A girl who was invincible.
Eliana watched him, waiting. Her body felt so tense, she feared it might snap.
A silly enough rumor to dismiss at first, he continued. But I kept hearing it, again and again, and when I told the prophet, I was ordered to investigate. I would go to Orlean, find this dread, and observe her. And if it was nothing, I would bring Princess Nirvana north, as was my original mission. But the rumors were indeed true. I knew you, Eliana, as soon as I saw your face.
His voice took on a rough quality that filled Eliana with a slow, creeping fear. What he was saying, whether it was madness or not, he believed it.
How could you have possibly known me for anyone?
She asked.
We'd never met before that night in Orlean, and—
I knew your parents,
Simon interrupted quietly.
I see them on your face, as clearly as I see the sun rise at dawn.
She stepped away from him, the truth settling slowly in her mind.
It was never about me helping you bring Na'vi to Astavar. You didn't need me for that.
No. When I found you, my mission to bring Na'vi home became secondary to keeping you safe. Everything, he said, moving urgently toward her, is secondary to keeping you safe. Na'vi's life, my life, Red Crown.
She stared at him in horror. Zara murmured close to her ear.
He isn't wrong in this, Eliana. We may not trust him altogether, but this, at least, is the real truth.
Simon shot an irritated glance Zara's way.
It's not my fault your human eyes aren't strong enough to see me, Zara said archly. There's no need to scowl.
I don't understand, Eliana whispered. This is ludicrous.
Simon stopped just short of touching her.
Why do you think your body can do what it does? You've been lying to yourself about it for years, and I understand why. But it's time to face the truth.
She lifted her chin, fumbling for speech.
I've just been lucky, is all.
You don't believe that.
He did reach for her then, his touch on her cheek so gentle it was a mere whisper of warmth.
It's your power, Eliana. The power you inherited from your mother. It's fighting to awaken at last.
And when it does,
a scream pierced the night, followed by Remy's voice.
El! He's here!
Glass crashed against stone. A brilliant orange light flared to life through the trees, illuminating the awful truth. The safe house was on fire. A familiar figure stood before it, staring out into the trees with a flaming torch in one hand. Simon swore.
Tick, tock, tick, tock, crowed Razavel.
We're all waiting for you, Dread. Come out and play.
Chapter 43. Riel. Marzana wandered the bitterly cold Kivayan tundra in search of solace. She dared not touch anyone for fear of burning them, and wandered alone for long months until stumbling upon a fresh green woodland tucked inside a canyon of ice. A fire burned in its heart, and as Marzana warmed her feet, a red-eyed firebird emerged blazing from the flames. And Marzana was not afraid. The Book of the Saints. After Tal's acolytes removed her blindfold, Riel stepped out of her tent and onto a stone platform, a cloak of feathers draped around her shoulders. A wall of sound slammed into her, cheers, cries of her name, ringing handbells. For Riel's final costume, Ludovine had drawn inspiration from Saint Marzana's firebird. A scarlet jumpsuit, embroidered with golden flames, clung to her curves. From her shoulders spilled a dramatic 10-foot-long cloak fashioned to look like trailing wings. Feathers of brilliant violet, vermilion, and amber covered the cloak from clasp to hem. Ludovine had gathered her hair into a high feathered knot, dusted her hair with gold, and painted her cheeks with crimson swirls. Riel drew in a long breath, scanning her surroundings. They'd brought her to a narrow valley between the grassy foothills north of Mount Seren, to the east of the city. Stands for spectators had been erected along the rocky ridges that terraced the slopes. But most of the crowd stood on foot, crowding behind safety railings for a better view, Flashes of gold winked at her from all sides. Sun Queen banners, pendants, sun-shaped play castings waved by screaming children. At the end of the platform, stairs led down into an enormous circular maze of wood and stone. The Archon stood at the top of the stairs, as did Sloane, red-eyed and shaking, and holding Tal's bronze shield. Terror swept through Riel like a physical force. "Sloane, why do you have Tal's casting?"
"He is in the maze," Sloane replied, her voice hoarse. "Bound and waiting for you."
"Before you accuse me of anything," the Archon said, "it was Magister Bellunon's idea, not mine."
Riel felt suddenly and impossibly small beneath her heavy cloak.
"I don't understand." "He thought it would help you," Sloane said, "if you were forced to face death by fire once more, as you did the day your mother died. You can save him, as you couldn't save her."
Sloane's tears spilled over.
"He said, tell her it's all right to be afraid, but her fear will not triumph this time. Tell her she is stronger than any flame that burns."
The doors at the bottom of the stairs opened, revealing a narrow dirt path between 12-foot wooden walls. Riel stared at the path in dismay, the crowd's cries ringing in her ears.
"You will find Magister Bellunon in the maze's heart," the Archon explained, pointing at a structure in the distant center of the maze. "Each dead end you meet will result in his acolyte setting fire to a section of the maze that surrounds him."
The world fell away, leaving Riel adrift. She glared at the Archon.
"How could you let this happen?"
The Archon's face was grave.
"Magister Bellunon insisted on it."
"Then you should have stopped him."
A horn blasted from one of the stands overhead. Riel nearly lunged at the man.
"At least let me bring him his casting."
"He requested that his casting remain with his sister," the Archon replied.
The horn blasted a second time. Across the maze, hissing snakes of fire sprang to life along random stretches of wall. Riel ripped off her cloak and flung it to the ground. Feathers went flying. Her palms blazed hot as she advanced on the Archon.
"If he dies," she ground out, "I will flay every inch of skin from your body."
The Archon did not flinch.
"If he dies, Lady Riel, you will have no one to blame but yourself. The maze will burn quickly. I suggest you run."
A third horn blast. Riel threw a desperate look at Sloane, then raced down the stairs and into the maze. Chapter 44. Eliana. They called her the Dread, not knowing that beneath the mask and cloak and painted-on smile, she was simply a girl. A girl with a heart that burned for blood. The Terrible Tale of the Deadly Dark Dread by Remy Ferracora. Eliana grabbed Erebeth and Whistler, then lunged forward only to be yanked back by her left arm. She whirled on Simon. "Let go of me!" "No," he held her fast. "Leave them."
"Are you mad? That's my brother!"
"And his life is nothing compared to yours." Simon glanced once at the safe house. Eliana thought she saw the ghost of regret in his eyes.
"Let's go."
Eliana twisted savagely in his grip.
"I'll kill you."
"I don't think you will."
He pulled her closer.
You're intrigued by what I've said. You want to know more. She spat at his face. Simon chuckled. You are so like her, he muttered darkly.
I am like myself, she hissed,